drive to create things. You're a writer, a photographer, a musician, a maker. You're ready to make things happen.
But chasing creative isn't always easy. Your time and energy go to your work, your family, and your life. Is it really possible to make space for the creative in your everyday?
Here at the Chasing Creative Podcast, we believe you can. We're talking to everyday creatives who have insights and action steps you can take today to make your creative plans happen.
I'm Ashley Brooks, a freelance writer and editor at Brooks Editorial and work-at-home mom of two who would love to devote more time to creative writing and journaling.
And I'm Abigail Krebs, the writer and photographer behind Inkwells and Images. I'm living my creative life nights and weekends after I get home from my job at an ad agency.
And you're listening to the Chasing Creative Podcast. Nicole Galata is the author of Eat This Poem, a literary feast of recipes inspired by poetry, which is coming out in March 2017 from Roost Books. She also pens a food blog by the same name. You can find her writing about writing over at NicoleMGalata.com and drinking lots of tea. She lives in Los Angeles with her husband, son, and French bulldog. So welcome to the podcast, Nicole.
Thanks for having me.
So I absolutely love your blog, and I can't wait to chat with you about your writing and your food. So why don't you get started by telling us a little bit about yourself and how you got to where you are now?
Sure. So I work for a food startup in Los Angeles. I'm a content editor, and I'm also an author and a blogger, but getting here was sort of a long and winding road for me. So I spent most of my career in philanthropy. I've worked at nonprofits and foundations for many years, and writing was always something that I just did on the side. So now I write at my full-time job, and of course I'm still pursuing my own projects as well. And I first started blogging back in 2008, and this was after I'd finished my master's degree and I was starting to work full time, and I was really just looking for some kind of creative outlet, which I think is how a lot of bloggers first get started. I really had no idea that blogging would ultimately lead me to writing a cookbook, so I guess the moral of the story is to just stay curious and open about where life can lead you.
Yeah, that's a similar theme we hear from a lot of people, I think.
Yes.
So your literary city guides are one of my favorite parts about your blog, and you recently hit 100 guides, including several international cities. So I would love to hear more about your literary city guides, if you could tell people who aren't familiar about what they are and how you came up with that idea to infuse travel into your blog.
Sure. So I came up with the idea because my publisher basically said, "We love the concept of your book, but your platform is too small." So this whole project started out as really a marketing decision initially, and I had to try to get creative to figure out how to leverage the focus of food and poetry on my blog while attracting some new people. So I was really trying to think outside the box with this one. And then one day it occurred to me that whenever I'm traveling, I'm usually looking for a good coffee shop, and I love to go into independent bookstores and pick up a book that's sort of a souvenir from my trip. So I thought it would be really perfect to focus on the literary aspects of travel, because there are so many travel guides out there as well. So that theme just fit so well with my blog. And when I launched the city guides, I only had three. So I wrote the one for Los Angeles, and then I asked two of my friends to put together guides for San Francisco and Nashville. And that's how we started. And since then, I haven't emailed a single person. People just volunteer. They see the guides, and local writers are really excited to just show off all of the literary spots in their town. So it was something that I hoped would do well, but I really didn't expect to have this many comprehensive guides on the site. And a huge surprise to me, actually, is that Literary City Guides is the most popular page on my website, even ahead of my blog. So it brings in a good chunk of my traffic every month as well.
That is crazy. I never would have thought to create a city guide or a travel guide of any kind for like books and literary things. I know you can always find travel guides that are talking about like the best restaurants to go to and what to see and attractions, But for us book lovers, having like this is where you can go buy a book or sit and read for a while. That sounds like an amazing addition.
Yeah, and it's such an important part of travel too. I think when you're out, you know, sightseeing, of course, is part of the fun, but then you need to recharge. So that usually involves, you know, getting a cup of coffee or tea. You want to have a good meal. And then, yeah, bookstores are great places to just kick up your feet for a little bit too.
It sounds like you really have this community going of like people who like words and reading, and many readers, as we know, are also writers.
Right.
So in addition to Eat This Poem, you also run a blog and an online community that helps writers balance work and creativity, which is a problem that we know on a very personal level. So I would love if you could share some of your best tips for writers who are seeking that balance.
Absolutely. So I have two tips on this topic. And the first one is about setting priorities and making a conscious choice to focus on your creative work. So I've experienced this in my life in so many ways. And there are always things we can't change, right? So we have to be at work during certain hours, or we have kids that need our attention, or we have family commitments, and those things will always be there. So I think as creatives, it's really up to us to take stock and figure this out for ourselves. And if we have time, I actually have a personal story to illustrate how this has worked for me in my own life.
Yeah, go for it. We'd love to hear.
So yes. So a few years ago, I was in a place in my life where I had a really bad commute. I was in the car for at least an hour and a half a day, sometimes more. So my time was really limited between the commute and work. But I was also at this point in my life where I really wanted to write a book. I could just feel that now was the time. So I was completely frustrated. I would, you know, try to just get myself in a good mental headspace on my drive. But I felt like all of that time was just sucking away from my writing and creative time. But I knew I had to figure something out or I wasn't going to move forward. So I started writing on my lunch breaks. And this was a really short window of dedicated time. And some days it was 20 minutes, some days it was a full hour. I didn't do it every day. I literally would write one paragraph or a recipe head note or just took some notes some days. So it kind of varied. But what happened is after about a month or so, when I was able to schedule some dedicated time, say on the weekends, like a 2 or 3 hour chunk to really go back and look at what I had, I ended up not staring at a blank page. And I had a really rough outline of an entire chapter of my book. So even on days when I felt like I wasn't getting anything done, or I was only writing, you know, three sentences or something, over the long term, it contributed to the big picture. And that's what allowed me to write my book. So I'm a huge, huge fan of doing small things and taking small chunks of time, because it really adds up in the end.
That is perfect advice, and advice we hear from so many creative people who have done some really, really big project, even against the odds of time and space and what they thought was like their ability to commit to something. So I really like the idea that it would even just help you kind of focus in and make sure that you knew you were making progress, even if it didn't always feel like that in those little tiny moments.
Right. And some days it honestly didn't feel like progress, but if you just stick with it and then you do come back to your work after, you know, several weeks or a month at a time, and you have more than you think and you have a great starting point. So that's definitely a huge piece of advice I love to give to people. And the other tip I have is to communicate with your inner circle. I think that this communication around our creativity and our needs is sort of underrated. So maybe, like, for example, your coworkers like to have impromptu lunches a lot, or you have kids and you need help, you know, you need to block off some time on the weekend. You need to talk with your spouse about kind of alternating that time. And I think you need to let people know how important this is to you and spell out exactly what you need and use them to make a plan together. I find that really helps as well.
Yeah, that's a really smart strategy, having that that support from the people in your life who are important to you and who can help you out and encourage you where you need it. Because sometimes I think we think like, oh, there's nobody in my life who's also a writer or also a painter or whatever your brand of creativity is.
Right.
But those people can still support and encourage you in other ways. And we often forget that. So we just don't tell them about what we're doing.
Absolutely. And then we can get frustrated that we don't have this time or they're not supporting us or whatever it is. And yeah, I think communication is a huge, huge aspect of making progress in our creative lives.
So kind of moving on from balancing kind of writing with daily life, what about just writing in general? You have several blogs that you run. You're also publishing your first cookbook here in just a little bit, and you have a one-year-old son. So how do you kind of manage to juggle all of that, both the writing and the children, but also like, how do you manage publishing on a blog with publishing a cookbook and kind of find time for both in a dedicated way?
Yes. So I think if you'd asked me this question before I had a baby, I'd probably have a very different answer for you. But these days and this is sort of new for me. I've implemented some different tools that are really helping me do what I do now because, of course, my time is even more constrained. So the first thing I've been doing for about 6 months or so is I have a very detailed editorial calendar that I work from. So because I'm a content editor, I'm in and out of an editorial calendar and Google Docs all day for my work. And it's a really efficient system. And so I've started applying that same technique to my personal project. So I have a sheet in Google Docs, or you can just use any spreadsheet. I have tabs for each month. I list the titles of my blog posts and my newsletter topics. And then I have a drop-down column where I can choose the stage that it's in. So whether it's a draft, whether it's ready for publication or whatever. And that is ultimately what keeps me on track because I can see the big picture of where my content is going. And then if I have a few minutes during the day and I'm still sort of operating on this system of writing in the margins where I might have 15 minutes here or 30 minutes there. So I can just open my editorial calendar. I see what's coming next. I can click on the link to the doc where I have it saved and just make a little bit of progress. So the editorial calendar is huge for me. And then the second tool I've been using is Asana, which is a project management tool. And it's a place where I can include all of my to-dos for both personal and creative projects with due dates. So I just find that being hyper-organized for me is really the only way I can get things done at this point.
Oh, that sounds like you've got a great system figured out.
Yeah, it's been working really well. As I said, it's sort of new for me. Before, I was just really able to just juggle everything, and I always knew what was going on. I didn't have to think too much about it. I think I had a little more headspace to focus on my creative work. But now having it all in a having it all in a calendar and being able to plan ahead of time is huge.
Yeah, I think we all kind of reach that point of saturation where we can't think of anything else, and kind of getting some dedicated space to write it down is the best thing you can do for your sanity as well as your writing life.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Mm-hmm.
I like even that you found a way to make the editorial system that you're already used to using through your job apply to your blog post and your cookbook, because since you're already in that system all the time anyway, it doesn't feel like as big of a switch. So I bet that's something that a lot of listeners could somehow apply, you know, their organization skills from their day job or those same tools and resources to their creative lives.
Oh, absolutely. I think because you're already familiar with something and a system that's in place that you're kind of in day to day, so it's very easy to adapt it to your creative life as well.
Yeah, so you had talked about, building up that community of support. And in addition to connecting with people in your everyday life, you know, your spouse and people close to you, how has connecting with other writers through your Wild Words Collective been helpful to your creative process?
Yeah, so I think for me, I'm finding more and more that community is just such an essential aspect of the creative process. So of course, no one can do the work for us. You know, like as a writer, I need that solitary time. I need to be alone with my thoughts. But to stay motivated and fueled, I find that when I connect with others who are in the same stage of life or who get what it means to be a creative person, in addition to being a parent or the head of your department at work or, you know, whatever it is, all those other hats that we're wearing, that really provides a lot of fuel for me as well.
Yeah. So is it ever a struggle to both find support, but also support other writers while you're trying to get your own creative projects done? I mean, everyone kind of has limited amounts of time in a day. How do you kind of balance where you're going to spend that, whether it's on your own projects or, you know, helping someone else kind of work through their roadblocks?
Yeah, so I find that I really enjoy supporting other writers, actually. And I was very intentional when I created this Facebook group that I wasn't going to do it if it wasn't something I couldn't really devote myself to. And I think the kind of person that I am, because I'm an organizer by nature, we talked about my editorial calendar, I curate content as part of my job. So running an online community for me is really a natural extension of my skill. So I don't feel like I'm doing something outside my wheelhouse where it would be a strain. And because of all of my organization, and I do have a separate editorial calendar for my community, so I plan everything ahead of time. I still leave room for inspiration or if something comes up, but I plan prompts and content and quotes and articles I'm sharing and all of that ahead of time as well. So that makes it really easy for me to be very present and have and be able to participate in a way that I want without feeling strained in all the other aspects of my life as well.
Yeah, that's a pretty good distinction to make, that it doesn't feel like a stretch of your time or your energy because it's come so naturally to you. I think sometimes we feel this pressure to, like, we have to do the same things everybody else on the internet is doing. And if you're trying to force yourself into a box you don't fit into, you are going to feel that pressure a lot more than if it's sort of a natural extension of your skill set already.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think there's that it's an interesting point you make too, because there's so much noise about what we should be doing online, and there are so many ways to contribute and find your community. But I completely agree, you need to just find what works for you and what feels good with your own abilities and just stick with that and try to, as hard as it is sometimes, to just kind of ignore what everyone else is doing and just focus on what works for you.
Yeah, that is exactly how I feel about video on the internet. I don't know about you ladies, but video terrifies me. Like, everyone doing these Snapchat stories and Instagram stories and Facebook lives, I'm like, no, the reason I write things is so I can think about them well ahead of the rest of the world reading them.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm not on Snapchat. I still don't get Instagram stories. I've been playing around a little bit with video in my Facebook group because I think it's a fun way to just show people that, hey, I'm a real person on the other side. But I was really nervous at first. I've gotten a little more comfortable with it now, but it's definitely not my comfort zone.
So your next big project is your cookbook called Eat This Poem, and it's coming out in just a few weeks. So how was that writing process different or similar to the writing that you do on your blogs?
Yeah, so with blogging, I find that it's a bit more about what's going on in my life day to day, whereas with a book, I was really conscious of the fact that what I was writing needed to feel a little bit timeless in a way. So to a certain degree, I was always kind of mining for memories and stories that I could share that would, I hope, resonate with people on a deeper level. I wasn't writing anything about, hey, over the weekend I did this, or, you know, it was very much kind of those tried and true stories that I wanted to share. And with the book, so the book is actually based off of how I structure my blog anyway. So there's a poem followed by some commentary from me and then a recipe. But with the book, because it was this cohesive thing, I really needed to make sure that the stories and the poems and the recipes were all intertwined in a way that made sense. So on the blog, I can just do post after post, and nothing needs to be linked in any way or follow an exact format. But with the book, I had chapters and they each had poems that needed to stand on their own, but also connect to a larger theme. So there was just a lot of kind of stitching together to make sure everything felt cohesive. So that was kind of the biggest difference, I think, between writing for the blog versus thinking about a project like a book.
Mm-hmm. I love that, what you said about how the cookbook has to feel timeless to people, because it's when you're so used to blogging, it's true. Like, you publish a post and you assume that in even just a couple of weeks or months, people are probably not going to see it as often unless they come across it on Pinterest or something. So it's definitely a different mindset to be in, thinking people are going to have this on their shelf and they might reference it for years to come.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm super excited to see how it turned out, though. Like, I still need to order my copy, but I'm like, I love that there's like poetry and then recipes. Like, what is there not to love about that? It's fantastic.
I agree. It kind of feels like you're being really, really smart and cooking for your family at the same time. Is that any, I mean, can you get better than that?
That's a great way to sort of tap into the, you know, the literary side of yourself while also, yeah, still doing something totally practical, like making a meal.
And I have such a hard time getting into poetry that I really enjoy being able to, like, you can just dive into a poem as you're cooking dinner, basically, which is something you have to do anyway. And it just seems like a nice way to introduce that other literary side that I'm not always naturally drawn to. And then, like, what a better way to make your daily chores kind of feel more like art. Like, I just love it.
Yeah, that's exactly sort of the idea I had when I first started the blog as well, because I was, you know, I spent so many years kind of in an academic setting with poetry, and I was suddenly out in the real world, and I didn't really have tools to relate to poetry in just my day to day. I just didn't know what to do. And so once I kind of discovered this pairing of food and poetry, it just made poetry so accessible in my daily life. And so that's absolutely what I'm hoping for others to get out of it as well.
Yeah. So now that all of our listeners are convinced that Eat This Poem is the cookbook they need to have in their kitchen, why don't you tell everyone a little bit about when they can get a copy and how they can order their copy?
Yes. So the book releases on March 21st. And so you can get your copy on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and IndieBound and Powell's are also selling it as well. And then after it releases, it hopefully should be in a lot of independent bookstores across the country as well.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. I cannot wait to go find my copy here in Madison. That would be cool, though, to have a copy in every single one of the literary guide places that you talk about on the blog. So we'll make that happen.
That would be from, I'll talk to my publishers about that.
There you go. So I have this marketing idea. It's going to cost you guys a lot of money, but please do this. So you've just written a book, and we, Ashley and I, of course, love books. So what have you been reading, like, while you're writing, or what have you been reading now that you're done kind of as escapist literature? We'd love to hear some of your favorites.
Yes. Yeah, so I just picked up Slouching Towards Bethlehem, the collection of essays by Joan Didion, which I'm really enjoying. And I also just finished up reading it's a memoir. It's called Still Writing by Danny Shapiro. And it's sort of a memoir. It's kind of a love letter to writing for writers. It was just kind of food for the soul, I think, after finishing a book. But one thing that I read recently that just kind of rocked my world a little bit is this book called Essentialism by Greg McKeown. And I read it last summer, and it has really changed my approach to my creative project. So I would love to tell you guys a little bit more about that one.
Yes, we are both huge fans of Essentialism. So we would love to hear what you've gotten out of it and how it's changed your approach to creativity.
Yeah, so for people that haven't read it yet, Essentialism is, I would say, it's kind of a lifestyle. It's really a way of embracing kind of a less is more or less but better philosophy. And it's one of those things that absolutely take some work on your end. And up front, when you first read the book, and maybe you guys had this experience as well, you sort of feel this resistance to the idea of saying no or setting aside projects that you feel are really important, right? It's kind of a painful, uncomfortable thing, but I found it to be such a healthy exercise in the end. So I read the book in the middle of last year, I think, around like late summer. And I read it and I thought it was amazing. And then I put it down because I didn't want to make any changes yet in my life. And then I picked it up again a couple of weeks later. I had to kind of tiptoe my way into it, but I knew it would be good in the end. So what I did was I wrote down all of my creative projects, their current projects and potential future projects on post-it notes, and then I put them up on an empty wall in my house. And every couple of days, I would walk by and rearrange them to try and whittle down what was most essential for me to work on. And I found that it was something that took some time for me to get clarity on, and I did have to devote some mental energy to it. It wasn't something that I just immediately came to conclusions on, but I found that it really helped to visually see all the things that I wanted to do and then kind of ask some tough questions about it and really be honest about, okay, how much time do I have? Is this, you know, the most productive thing I could be doing right now for my writing life or for kind of that business aspect of being a writer? You know, and no creative person, I think, wants to not do something that they feel excited about, but, you know, our lives don't support creative work 100% of the time. So I think this book is so helpful to just get clear on what is essential and what isn't. And as someone who's gone through the exercise, and maybe you guys felt this way as well, that there is some freedom on the other side, but it can definitely be tough.
Yeah, I know. I read Essentialism probably a year or so ago now, and I remember just like underlining so much of that book.
Me too.
And I actually have it on my list to read again before I have a baby in April. So I figured it would be like a really good thing to kind of hammer back in before I enter that zone where you have not really a lot of time for anything, and to focus on what's the most essential is probably the best option there is.
Yeah, babies sort of force you into essentialism because all of a sudden you don't have time for anything.
They really do. So it was kind of nice to have this book. It's almost like a handbook, really,
yeah.
That is perfect, yes, for parents and creatives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that idea of using post-it notes, though, because that's such a, like, sometimes in our heads, we think we can do all these things, but seeing them written out visually like that, you would really be forced to come to terms with how much you're trying to do.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean you have to give it up forever. I think it's just helpful to see, okay, what's most important right now? And kind of, I think it speaks to this bigger issue with our creativity where it's over the course of our entire lives, right? So we're always going to be pursuing creativity, writing, art, whatever it is that you do. So we have to kind of take this long-term, you know, vantage point when we're looking at our project. So I think if we can step back and see it from that angle and not get so uptight about the fact that, oh, I can't do the, you know, these five things that I want to do immediately and think about, you know, longer term, I think it makes it a lot easier.
Have you been reading anything good lately, Abby?
Not a whole lot. Nothing. Well, that's a lie. I just finished a book called You Will Know Me by, I believe it's Meg Abbott, A-B-B-O-T-T. I would have to look that up to be sure. But it was actually about a, like, young teenager who's a competitive gymnast, and it's more of a thriller than what I normally read, but it's told from her mother's point of view. And, like, you find out very early on that somebody dies at, like, their gymnastics gym that they all train at. And then the whole book is kind of figuring out who did it and what the motives were and things. But it was really, really well written. And, I mean, you're only getting the mom's perspective, and so it's very internal. And I thought it was a really fascinating concept, especially it kind of came out right when the Olympics were happening last year. So I feel like it got a lot of buzz because of that. And it was kind of really good, like, just can't put this down sort of literature.
Yeah, I haven't heard of that one, but that sounds really intriguing. Like the you knowing that somebody dies right at the beginning reminds me of Big Little Lies by Leon Moriarty.
It had a lot of those kind of like characteristics of it, like piecing together the story, but from different angles and at different times and with different timelines. And it really, really captured my attention, which not all thrillers usually do. So I thought it was well done and well worth a read if anyone needs anything that's just fun and kind of completely absorbing for a few days.
Awesome.
So, what about you, Ashley? Have you been reading anything really awesome? You just got back from vacation. Yeah. What did you read on vacation?
I did. So I only read one book on vacation, actually, and it wasn't the book I was going to talk about today. I was going to save it just because we have so many interviews to record, and I'm doing that thing I always do where I read so many books at once and then I never finish any of them in a timely manner.
You can do that, too.
So the one that there's one that I'm kind of right in the middle of that I thought might be good to talk about with Nicole here, because it's another cookbook that you read. I love readable cookbooks. And this one is called Make the Bread by the Butter by Jennifer Reese. Ooh. And it's kind of a compilation of recipes and then her notes on what you should make from scratch because it tastes better and it's more economical, and what is too putsy to make at home and you should just go out and buy it at the store and not feel guilty about it. So that's been really interesting.
I am going to look that up.
Yeah, I love that idea. I want to look that one up too.
Yeah, I really enjoy it. And then she also has like a hassle factor in with each recipe. So like if you don't want to dedicate a lot of time to doing something, you'll be able to look at it and know like, oh, this isn't the recipe for me. But I don't always agree with her on it, because almost all of the breads she's like, well, it's kind of a hassle, but it's worth it because they taste so good. But I bake bread from scratch all the time. So I'm like, all of those, I'm like, well, that's not a hassle at all. What is she talking about? So you sort of have to go through and see how much you agree with her. But it's really interesting. And the recipes are worth having on hand, I think.
Sounds great. I also love the idea of just supporting making things from scratch and just getting that into your daily and weekly routine as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's something I'm kind of into, is like, okay, what can I make on my own instead of like buying it in a can? And so like, mm-hmm. we're slowly working more things in, like enchilada sauce is a newer one, and I want to start making my own like chicken stock and chicken bouillon powder and stuff instead of buying that. So we're working on it. But right now bread is the big one. Like I make all our sandwich bread and most of our other like pastry bread right now. So
that's amazing. And bread is so delicious when it's homemade.
It is. And once you know how to do it, it's so easy. It's like way less time than it would take to go to the store and buy it.
Yeah. It's hard to buy it once you start making it yourself, for sure.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
I love good homemade bread. And it's hilarious because Scott, my husband, consistently wants to buy like the 89-cent butternut, like whole grain white bread, like the most bland, and it's not bread. It's like sponge. And he loves it. And it's like one thing that he absolutely can't give up. And it's like, okay, I guess we'll buy this 89-cent butternut bread.
And that is the good news, right? At least it's only 89 cents.
Exactly.
But do you really want to eat a sponge?
Yeah, if he wants to eat a sponge, he's welcome to eat a sponge. So I don't know.
So it was great talking with you today, Nicole. Before we get going, would you want to tell all of our listeners where they can find you at your different blogs, your website, social media, all that good stuff?
Sure. So my two blogs, you can find me at eatthispoem.com, which is my literary food blog. And then you can find me writing about writing and the writer's life over at nicolemgalata.com. And my handle for Twitter and Instagram is Nicole Galata, just my full name spelled out. So I'd love to connect with you guys.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for joining us and coming on and talking about your creativity and how you practically make it happen with so much going on in your life. So we really appreciate you taking some time to chat with us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Listening to the Chasing Creative podcast. If you like what you heard in this episode, be sure to stop by chasingcreative.com to check out the show notes, catch up on past episodes, and subscribe to the podcast.
If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love it if you leave us a review on iTunes. You can also join in the creative conversation by tweeting to us at Abigail E. Krebs or at Brooks Editorial, or by using the hashtag ChasingCreative on Twitter and Instagram.
If there's a guest you'd love to hear from on the podcast, or if you have any feedback for us, drop us a line at chasingcreativepodcast@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening. Until next week, go chase your creative.